This audio recording is a resource of the Center for Bioethical Reform, CBR. This and other resources can be found at www.abortionno.org. This essay is by Greg Cunningham, CBR Executive Director, and is read by CBR staff, March 2011. Dear pro-life friend, on August 14th, 2010, we received a message from an English woman who had just seen our abortion photos. She is 33 years old and from Liverpool, Merseyside. She said, "I had an abortion some years ago. It hurts me so much to see what I did." She added that, "I feel if they saw some of the pictures on this site, they'd think twice. I know I would have. If only we could have reached her sooner." Our pictures cut right through abortion lies. And abortion lies are everywhere. For instance, our associate, Lila Rose, made a live-action undercover video which exposed abortion lies at a Planned Parenthood abortion clinic in Appleton, Wisconsin, September 8, 2009. A counselor, actually an abortion saleswoman, was asked the size of a 10-week fetus. "About as wide as my fingernail," she lied. The head-to-bottom length of a 10-week fetus is actually 2 inches and can be seen at the EHD.org website. She was then asked when the heart begins to beat, and again she lied. Heart tones at 7 weeks, but no heartbeat until about 17 or 18 weeks. In fact, by day 22, an embryo's heart is beating, not merely making tones, according to Early Human Development, Volume 37, Issue 2, 1994, Embryonic Heart Rate in Dated Human Embryos. This Planned Parenthood counselor was also asked if it's a baby yet by 10 weeks. She answers, "A fetus is what's in the uterus right now. That is not a baby." The live-action investigator then asks when it does become a baby and was told at birth. This lie is later repeated by the abortionist who says, quote, "It's not a baby at this stage or anything like that." The final lie he offers is, quote, "This is very safe. The stage you're at now is very, very safe. Safer than having a baby, actually." No mention, of course, of any of the many medical journal articles documenting the risks abortion poses for mothers and their subsequent children. See, for example, Time.com, December 18, 2007, quote, "A link between abortion and preemies," which says, quote, "Abortions increase the risk of low birth weight in future pregnancies by a factor of 3, and of premature birth by a factor of 2. Prematurity and low birth weight contribute significantly to birth defects." In her deeply dishonest autobiography, Life on the Line, Faye Waddleton, former president of Planned Parenthood, lied about Dr. Bernard Nathanson's abortion video, Silent Scream. She fraudulently disputed the age Dr. Nathanson assigned to the fetus whose abortion he depicted as it was imaged with ultrasound. Ms. Waddleton falsely asserted that, quote, "The facts of the matter were quite different. Were the fetus the age that Nathanson claimed, 12 weeks, it would have been less than 2 inches long, with small buds where limbs would eventually be, and facial features that were the merest suggestion of what they would eventually become." But it is Planned Parenthood's Miss Waddleton who got it wrong. She refers to small limb buds at 12 menstrual weeks, but in the Endowment for Human Development video titled "The Biology of Prenatal Development," EHD.org, a fetus 9 weeks following fertilization, 11 menstrual weeks, can clearly be seen yawning and flexing its fingers. In a study entitled "The Emergence of Fetal Behavior, Qualitative Aspects, Early Human Development, 1982, we read not of small limb buds, but that, quote, "extension of an arm is frequently accompanied by extension of fingers at least after 12 weeks." In a medical school teaching text by Morin Persaud, "The Developing Human, Clinically Oriented Embryology," Saunders, 1993, it is revealed that by 10 weeks following fertilization, fetal fingers are so fully formed that they have fingernails. An article entitled "Sona Embryology, an Organ-Oriented Approach Using a High-Frequency Vaginal Probe," Journal of Clinical Ultrasound, 18, May 1990, says that by just 9 weeks after fertilization, the fetus's facial features are so mature that its lips reach their final stages of development. Miss Wildton's book further betrays Planned Parenthood's morbid fear of facts related to prenatal development by describing a university debate with Dr. John Wilk, former president of the National Right to Life Committee, in which she threatened to walk off the stage if Dr. Wilk was permitted to play an audio tape of a fetal heartbeat. The intellectually dishonest academic dean who was moderating the debate was either a partisan pro-abort or a pathetic coward, because he not only agreed to Miss Wildton's demand that oral materials be banned, but he also barred the use of visual materials for good measure. Making certain that women see the truth about abortion and see it in time is one of our most important objectives at CBR. We don't allow university administrators to control the terms of our engagements. We avoid failed debates in auditoriums controlled by hostile deans and instead force campus-wide discussions by setting up abortion photo displays on huge university plazas controlled by us. We do this in partnership with student pro-life groups whose members want their classmates to see what their pro-abortion professors are trying to hide. One of our most productive collaborations has involved none other than Lila Rose, who has helped us with Genocide Awareness Project displays at both UCLA and UC Berkeley. We have also given her the abortion photos she uses so effectively. Lila has additionally been effective at producing undercover videos to expose Planned Parenthood's secret abortions on minor children and other shocking misconduct. WashingtonTimes.com, February 3, 2011, posted a story headlined, "New Video Shows Clinic Workers Assisting Sex Traffickers." In a statement, Stuart Scheer, Vice President for Communications of Planned Parenthood, praised the reaction of the worker on the newest video. Mr. Scheer claimed, quote, "The Planned Parenthood staff member reacted professionally," and then menacingly added that information related to the live-action hidden camera visits had been turned over to members of Planned Parenthood's national security team who are working with the FBI, which is investigating these visits. Note that Planned Parenthood defiantly intimates that it is live-action which is guilty of wrongdoing. But as I watched Lila's tapes, I was sickened to note that when the Planned Parenthood workers were told children were being raped and prostituted, they didn't ask about the children, they asked about the money. "Do they have insurance?" was the question they asked reflexively and repeatedly. When Lila later asked an argumentative CNN interviewer if she approved of child abuse, Lila got a sophomoric and condescending lecture on journalistic ethics. The importance of reporters maintaining their neutrality. Really? Has journalism become so corrupt that journalists are no longer allowed to be against child abuse? That is a self-serving canard. Liberal journalists take sides all the time. Their bias is endemic and ill-concealed. This particular reporter repeatedly tried to change the subject and make Lila the issue. Should the Congress and the Justice Department have turned a blind eye to evidence that Richard Nixon was corrupt because reporters Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein opposed his policies and wanted him out of the White House? Did the Washington Post's political agenda make the Watergate tapes any less indicting? It takes huge chutzpah for Planned Parenthood to condemn the deceptive methods Lila used to expose the deceptive methods Planned Parenthood uses to cover up the rape and prostitution of children. The fact that they immediately turn this matter over to their security team means Planned Parenthood sees it more as a security breach than an ethical lapse. There is a deeply rooted culture of corruption at Planned Parenthood, which cannot be remediated. ACORN was defunded precisely because it couldn't be redeemed. There is tactical value in embarrassing Planned Parenthood for enabling criminality, but they should also be hammered for using taxpayer money to undermine parental authority by performing secret abortions and administering prescription birth control drugs behind parents' backs. Our objection should transcend the morality of abortion and birth control per se. This isn't merely about what's decided. It's about who decides. Parents or bureaucrats? Planned Parenthood's deceitful assault on children is a particularly perverse example of government overreach. Planned Parenthood has always used pap smears for women as a cover for the real mission, which is killing the children of poor women, and as usual, the press has circled the wagons to protect Planned Parenthood from accountability. Politico.com, February 16, 2011, ran a piece entitled, Pence's War on Planned Parenthood. It should have been headlined, Planned Parenthood's War on Abused Little Girls. Then NewYorkTimes.com piled on with a February 25th, 2011 story called The War on Women. It should have been headlined, The War on Parental Authority. The article said, quote, Republicans in the House of Representatives are mounting an assault on women's health and freedom that they would deny millions of women access to affordable contraception and life-saving cancer screenings and cut nutritional support for millions of newborn babies and struggling families. But the NYU student newspaper let the cat slightly out of the bag by reporting a story, February 28, 2011, headlined, Protesters Fight for Planned Parenthood. It said, in response to the bills passing through the U.S. House of Representatives last week, the protesters gathered in Folly Square in front of the New York City Supreme Court. Protesters gathered to attempt to sway the Senate's vote, which is scheduled for next week. The crowds cheered, Tell the folks on the Hill, don't mess with my birth control pill. Sounds less like improvised mothers and more like spoiled brats who want to party hardy at taxpayer expense. All the hysterical shrieking is totally bogus. ChristianNewsWire.com published an analysis called Pence Addresses Misconceptions About Amendment to End Funding for Planned Parenthood, February 24, 2011. In it, the congressman said, quote, First, the Pence Amendment does not cut any funding for women's health services under Title X. It would simply block those funds already in the bill from subsidizing America's largest abortion provider. He then explained that, quote, In fact, it has never been my ambition to reduce funding for Title X services. I applaud the important work done at Title X clinics, such as pregnancy diagnosis, breast cancer screening, and HIV testing. I support young women getting access to care they need and deserve. My legislation would help protect women who find themselves in crisis pregnancies by ensuring they receive access to unbiased and compassionate health services. He added, quote, Critics have asserted that if Planned Parenthood is denied funding, there would be no other organizations available to provide these services to women in our larger cities. This, too, is incorrect. He then repeated, quote, There are literally thousands of clinics across the country other than Planned Parenthood that receive federal funding and offer access to health care for low-income women and families. One of Planned Parenthood's most dishonest counterarguments has always been that cutting its funding for birth control services would lead to more abortions. But Kirsten Powers, an influential liberal blogger, blew that red herring out of the water, a mixed metaphor which actually works. In a Daily Beast story on March 5, 2011, headlined, quote, Planned Parenthood's Birth Control Myth. It ran with a sub-headline which read, Planned Parenthood claims women get more abortions if they don't have access to contraception, though research suggests otherwise. In fact, Powers cites, quote, a 2009 study by the journal Contraception, which found in a 10-year study of women in Spain that as overall contraceptive use increased from around 49% to 80%, the elective abortion rate more than doubled. She concludes that Planned Parenthood's, quote, deception smacks of a fleecing of taxpayers in an effort to promote an ideological agenda rather than a sincere effort to help women plan families. At last, some intellectual honesty from the left. Planned Parenthood is like radical Islam. NationalReview.com, January 31st, 2011, ran a story headlined, quote, Fear the Muslim Brotherhood. It said that leitmotif, we love death more than you love life, has been a staple of every jihadist from bin Laden through Maj, Nidal Hasin, the Fort Hood killer. The proof that Planned Parenthood loves death is their shameless daily slaughter of thousands of innocent babies. The Muslim Brotherhood has been called, quote, one of the most dangerous Islamic groups in the world today, in an American Thinker article titled, The Muslim Brotherhood, Islam's Global Challenge to the West, October 17, 2010. The book, The Muslim Brotherhood, Barry Rubin, Palgrave Macmillan, 2010, says that, quote, the Muslim Brotherhood's most influential theologian, Sheikha Yusuf al-Quraidai, has repeatedly justified suicide bombings called on Muslims to support the insurgency against American forces in Iraq and justified the killing of civilians. the martyrdom operations carried out by the Palestinian factions to resist the Zionist occupation are not in any way included in the framework of prohibited terrorism, even if the victims include some civilians, Quradwai said in 2003. Yet Time.com ran a story headlined, "What's so scary about Egypt's Islamists?" November 29, 2010. It described the Muslim Brotherhood's publicly stated goals as charity work, as well as education reform, higher teacher salaries, better health care and literacy programs, and maternity leave for working mothers. The article fails to mention the Brotherhood's call for war against Israel. The news media covers up Planned Parenthood's violence as vigorously as they minimize the violence of the Muslim Brotherhood. In an article trivializing the undercover camera stings which have caught Planned Parenthood staff facilitating child abuse, the New York Times carried a February 4, 2011 column titled, "The Siege of Planned Parenthood." It defended Planned Parenthood as, quote, "an organization that provides millions of women with both family planning services and basic health medical care, like pap smears and screening for diabetes, breast cancer, cervical cancer, and sexually transmitted diseases." No mention of tearing the arms off of viable babies, but in the wake of Lila's multiple exposes, Planned Parenthood says they will again provide remedial retraining of their entire staff nationwide. What kind of an organization, however, hires people who must repeatedly be retrained to protect sexually abused children? And that is why we will continue to partner with activists such as Lila Rose and Live Action to expose both the corruption of Planned Parenthood and the horror of abortion. With your help, we will use horrific pictures to stop this terrible cover-up. Everywhere, Planned Parenthood's business donors try to hide the truth from their customers. Everywhere, the press tries to hide the truth from its readers, viewers, and listeners. Everywhere, doctors try to hide the truth from their patients. Everywhere, teachers try to hide the truth from their students. Everywhere, politicians try to hide the truth from their constituents. And even everywhere, pastors try to hide the truth from their congregations. God has given us the evidence required to prove that truth, and your continued support gives us the means to reveal that evidence. Please also share this letter with friends and family who might be willing to help us get out the truth. Lord bless. Greg Cunningham, Executive Director. This concludes the recording of Greg Cunningham's letter for March 2011. For more information on this and other topics, go to www.abortionno.org.